Welcome, everyone. This is The LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, September 29th, 2007. As you know, we're weekly from 3 to 4 p.m. I will be the host today. This is Marcia Mary Baker. I'm with the economic section of the Executive Intelligence Review News Service. And today, we are on the threshold of really seeing through potential strategic shifts in the world. So we have a double header set of topics and guests. The very first one we'll start with in a second is with a focus on potential for the good in Southwest Asia, in the Middle East. And we have with us here Michelle Steinberg. Welcome, Michelle.
Hi, Marcia.
Who many of you know from hosting the show and definitely from being the counterintelligence co-director for EIR News Service. And right after Michelle gives us an update on what's happening in that part of the world and its potential, we have a LaRouche Youth Movement panel on and someone else joining us from Pennsylvania on the whole upheaval at the state and local level on organizing for responding to the world financial collapse by a firewall set of emergency measures in Washington, D.C., the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act. And so I welcome with us from the northeastern states, from Boston, Allie Parabakovsky. Welcome, Allie.
Hi, Martha.
And from the upper north, the upper Midwest states, Maria Channon is in Detroit. Welcome, Maria.
Hello.
And they will be joined from Pennsylvania by an old Mr. Pennsylvania friend of ours for 20, 30 years, Phil Valenti, who's been in Harrisburg. He'll be with us in Philadelphia from LaRouche Political Action Committee. He'll join us in 15 minutes. And here, I'm just going to nod because he will be getting on in 15 minutes from the war room of the LaRouche Youth Movement with an overview on what's happening in Washington and elsewhere in the country. We'll have Kunle Ojifei-Timi. So, Michelle, I think without ado, why don't you just go ahead on what's happened and what we can help out on and what we can look forward to?
Well, of course, Marcia, the main event of the week is going to be your feature for the second part of the show, which is the tremendous avalanche or opening of the floodgates of support for the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act of 2007, which is LaRouche's plan for economic recovery. And I know you're going to cover that in detail from the people who were on the ground in that fight. But first I want to start with another of Mr. LaRouche's initiatives, which he made on September 18th, fresh off of the holding of the Schiller Institute's conference in Kiedrich, Germany. Now the Eurasian land bridge is a reality. And the initiative that Mr. LaRouche has taken is to give his personal full backing for the support to Israeli President Shimon Peres, who has come out and said that that the time for nervousness between in relations between Israel and Syria is over. We are ready to negotiate directly. Peres said that on September 18th, ironically at a point of very high tensions between Israel and Syria, when many people are thinking, is there going to be another war launched by the war party in Syria, in Israel rather, against Syria, like the 2006 war? So what LaRouche has done is cut right through all of the tensions, all of the stalemates and checkmates, and going round and round and round the same tired old dead-end issues of Israeli-Palestinian so-called peace talks, which have been stalled out from the moment that George W. Bush stole the election in the end of 2000. That was the end of any peace process. Instead of going around that track again, what Mr. LaRouche has said is, isn't it time for a war-proof design in the Middle East that involves nuclear desalination? Isn't Syria a likely partner for Israel for such an agreement? And we have an article coming out by my colleague Dean Andromedis. It's going to be in the next issue of Executive Intelligence Review, which is called LaRouche Backs Perez on Peace Talks with Syria. And I think this is a very exciting time, but let me explain what's so important and unique about what Mr. LaRouche has said. On September 26th, he elaborated on this whole issue of the peace between Israel and Syria, and saying, I think the time has come for Perez to do something like what he's proposed, and that Perez is ideal for this purpose. Remember, he was standing right next to Yitzhak Shamir on November 5th, 1995, when Yitzhak Rabin, R-A-B-I-N, in 95, when Prime Minister Rabin had just succeeded in getting the Israeli parliament to ratify the Oslo Agreement. Moments later, Yitzhak Rabin was gunned down in an incident which has had the impact of the Kennedy assassination for every single Israeli and Palestinian, and with that, in a way, died the success of Oslo. So Perez was foreign minister at the time, standing next to Rabin. He, and as Lynn said, he's got in a unique position to carry this through with all of his experience. LaRouche also said, I fully support Perez's proposal. I understand there's a lot of problems around it, but we've got to get something started right now. This is LaRouche's words again. We have to start someplace. It's obvious that Syria will be willing to cooperate, not as a patsy, but in the sense of getting into discussion. So let's do it. The key thing here, forget about making a package deal. If you have a package in mind, we'll get to that, but don't start with the package. And what he means by that is these various ideas floating around to have final solutions, status conferences between the Palestinian and the Israelis. Right now, the Palestinians are totally divided, which was evilly engineered by the British. You've got two Palestines right now, one by Hamas in the Gaza, the other by President Abu Mazen, whose given name is Mahmoud Abbas. And, why the stalemate there? I mean, the Israeli treatment, the U.S. treatment, the European treatment, the British treatment of the legitimately elected Hamas government is amazing. They refused to give them 1 cent for governing the country because it was Hamas. And 63, I believe, of the elected members of the Palestinian Legislative Assembly are 63 members of the Palestinian parliament are stuck in Israeli jails. They're hostages. So, that's a dead-end issue. That's what LaRouche is saying. So let us start somewhere. Let's do it. Forget the package deal. The Israeli-Syria negotiations. And what, going back to LaRouche's words, he said, you want to make this a personal pride of a faction in Israel and a faction in Syria. Make it their personal baby, and they will make it work. When you try to get too many people involved in this and too many conditions, this deal here, no, this deal there, no, just take Perez's thing in LaRouche's name and say LaRouche is backing Perez personally. And Lynn also totally, totally emphasized that the issue is the nuclear desalinization, the real name for peace.
Let me ask you something there, Michelle, because I know you've been speaking on radio and TV since September 18th about this. You've been on Iranian television, I think, and so forth.
Yes.
And I know just from you've been with this for frankly decades with Mr. LaRouche on this, and I remember Mr. Perez over 15 or 20 years ago put a book out and wrote opinion columns. One was in Italy, that there could be what he called islands of safety where you could have nuclear-centered water desalination. He said it. Then we didn't hear anything for 15 or 20 years.
You're right.
So what do you think yourself or Mr. LaRouche is talking about, where this initiative even comes from Mr. Perez?
Well, the the initiative clearly comes from Lyndon LaRouche, as we know, going back to 1973 when things were really, really at a deadlock in the Middle East. And there was really, between the Soviet Union and the United States, a kind of showdown, which everybody feared could escalate into nuclear war. And at that point, Mr. LaRouche came up with the Oasis Plan. And even then, he recognized, which was true then, it's true in spades, trump cards, every suit, you know, in the deck today, that the real issue for the Middle East is water. With water comes food production. With water comes life. And Marcia and I, listeners, we had the opportunity to have a profound session of questions and answers and an interview with Dr. Atili, a Palestinian specialist in water, and what he told us about the disease rate in Gaza among little children, especially because they have no clean water, is just astounding. So Lynn has been on this for a very long time. Perez knows it's right. Perez knows pretty much every single leader. I mean, he's a man, I believe, in his 80s, as LaRouche is. So he knows every leader in the Fatah and the Palestinian Liberation Organization. He dealt closely with Hafez Assad, President Bashar al-Assad's father, and he also knows the economic conditions. And has been in dialogue over the years with LaRouche through intermediaries and so forth on this whole issue of water and development. So it's time to, the time is ripe. In addition to that, it happens that, and this will be in Dean Andromedis' article, that Israel, Jordan, Egypt, and Syria have all been talking about the necessity of moving to nuclear power, which is part of the worldwide nuclear renaissance. So the time is now, and I urge people to go to our website or subscribe to EIR online. May I give our toll-free number that people can reach us? It's 1-800-929-7566 for more information about this. And the websites for contact, Marcia can give you later to read this article in depth.
Right, and apropos of what Michelle's saying, over the last decades, some of the hydrologists, the Palestinian engineers are some of the best in the world, the Israeli experts on dry land, agriculture and how to use water, calculated, and we put this out 20 years ago, all it would take would be, this sounds big, but it's not really, 20 nuclear plants of a modest size could desalinate enough water that would be equivalent to the famous Jordan River. The wow. entire Jordan River, which is a very small river, but it's, look what it means. It goes back to biblical times as far as meaning, you know, bridge over Jordan or roll Jordan, roll. You can, resources are man-made. That's what you're saying, Michelle. Right. And this is calculable, and there will be more on this, and people should plan to activate on this. And let me, Michelle may have another thought before she has to leave us with all the things she's doing today, and we switch on to the breaking situation among the states in the United States. But I want to say right here that Mr. LaRouche himself, in following up this and many initiatives, is giving a live webcast October 10, everyone. That'll be a Wednesday, October 10 at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. And it's going to be based out of Washington, D.C. There might be other locations in the Americas, if not up near the United Nations, for group attendance. And the for sure where you can connect into it is www.larouchepac.com, LaRouchePac.com. So, Michelle, do you want to add anything more?
Well, just in summary, what Lyndon LaRouche is doing is he's turning the world's attention to the peaceful uses of nuclear power, which is the only future. It's a transition to fusion power, which will hopefully be developed, must be developed in the next 25 years, one generation away. But in the meantime, we're running out of fossil fuels. There's no two ways about that. And the war party, they're talking about $100 to $200 barrel of oil. That will result in genocide. It will result in mass deaths of people all over the world. But the front page of the Wall Street Journal today has an article saying the U.S. and the world can survive $100 barrel oil prices. The article is nonsense. It's total nonsense. But the only reason that I can ascertain for putting it out, and I discussed this with Mr. LaRouche earlier today, is to condition people to that figure, $100 a barrel. So in the midst of this collapse, this financial collapse, which you're now going to discuss, my goodness, we don't need $100 a barrel oil. We need nuclear power and fresh, clean, safe water.
Thank you very much. As also, Michelle, this is another way of saying we have to get rid of Dick Cheney. He represents that, right? That's his
right.
Energy program is his war program.
That's right.
If you want to say anything in closing on that, otherwise.
No, we still have the wonderful news that Dennis Kucinich's bill, House Resolution 333, is still in the works, and there are some reports Congressman Kucinich is going to do something to drive this home to stop a Cheney war on Iran by using a personal privilege issue or procedure in the Congress. We don't know if that's true or not, but we will be watching it.
Oh, that's very good news. Well, unless there's some other question to jump in, Maria, Allie, we can thank Michelle. Do you have anything else, or we'll go right ahead? Okay, thank you very much, Michelle.
Thank you.
And Michelle Steinberg will be leaving us. Thank you for that update. We're now going to switch to the related topic, but the kind of fight. It's a different theater, but here in the United States, to have the state and local leadership of the country bring to bear the pressure on Washington, D.C. to force through emergency federal-level action, and it was announced August 22nd by Mr. LaRouche by the name of Homeowners and Bank Protection Act. It's only been 5 weeks ago, and this is taking the country like a firestorm, led by the LaRouche Youth Movement in literally a couple of dozen state capitals. And in the last week of activity especially, that's what brings our guests on with us today. We've seen resolutions co-sponsored by dozens of people filed in the state legislature of Michigan, Pennsylvania, New Hampshire, Alabama. And so with that, I want to turn to the LaRouche Youth Movement leaders here, and we'll be joined from Pennsylvania also by an old friend of ours, Phil Valenti, in a few minutes. Oh, Phil, welcome. You're in Philadelphia then, right?
Yes,
And who's been in Harrisburg. So unless one of you wants to interrupt, I'd like Kunle here in the LaRouche Youth Movement War Room give just a couple minutes kickoff for the breadth of this, if that's what you choose to do.
Yeah.
And maybe the view from how it was felt in Washington, D.C., all this action by the Congressional Black Caucus that's just had its annual meeting here.
Yeah. What I could elaborate further is that last week we could see what we have to do right now is to look at where we were a week ago. And you could look at with optimism breeds hope, and with hope breeds optimism, or with optimism brings forth courageous action. And what we did elaborate further last week is that I gave an indication that despite the fact that we got all the endorsements, the next level of action was to get state legislature resolutions and being able to proliferate all over the country, and to be able to use the war room as a coordinating center to feed into D.C. And what we are now seeing now is that we are now seeing the dam of hopelessness, fear, and inaction has been totally been broken down, contrary to the naysayers and pessimists. What we are now beginning to see now is that all over the country, we are beginning to see the effect of the cohesiveness of the movement in order to inoculate and to proliferate the message of Lynn's message of the firewall as a further stop in preventing further disintegration into the country. Now, what we're beginning to see right now, not only do we have state legislatures in Pennsylvania, Michigan, Alabama, and all over the country, we're beginning to see the cascade of endorsements beginning to have an effect in D.C. and I could just give an elaboration, is that with these state legislatures' endorsements, especially with Mervyn Damily, who is now in the California Assembly right now, his name was known all over the CBC event. The Congressional Black Caucus had an event this week, and what happened was, with the state endorsements from Harold James from Pennsylvania and also with Mervyn Damily, this was used as a reinforcement to the congressmen in D.C. with their names, especially with the congressional aides with their names on, in which a lot of series of meetings, a plethora of meetings, were able to be set up, because we were able to feed into D.C., into this Congressional Black Caucus event, the urgency and the need to pass this legislation. And all over the whole event, Lynn's name was recognized. The importance of his name and the message was recognized in the fact that we're now seeing, even in the Senate, we're beginning to see a certain senator from Pennsylvania who knows Harold James, who directed us to his house in Stafford to set up a meeting. So we're now beginning to have all kinds of meetings in the Congressional Black Caucus and all over the country right now, because we're now beginning to see the effectiveness of the Midwest deployment. We're going to see the effectiveness of the East Coast and also in the West Coast also. Because the West Coast, what you're beginning to see now is that not only did we have a second meeting from a prominent senator from the West Coast, we had a meeting with the housing and banking aide on this same issue. This was the second meeting that we had. And the two aides have dedicated themselves for the last 3 weeks being able to have a clear sense of the crisis. And the substance of this meeting focused on Lynn's economics, what we've been up to, and also what is the difference between monetarism versus physical economy. The Lynn's triple curve also served as a good, effective pedagogical device to the banking aid. And this is what led up to a much more future setup meeting later in the future. So we're beginning to see the next level right now is we have to make sure to get the congressmen in D.C., because that's the next level of the battle. We have to make sure right now we get a federal congressman to have enough balls to put up with all this and be able to put up legislation.
Thank you very much. Let's turn right to the regions you mentioned then. Do you mind? Let's begin with Pennsylvania, Phil, since you just got on, if you want to give a situation report on what's happened and where we go from here.
Sure. Well, as most people know, on Thursday, Representative James' staff submitted the co-sponsors on his resolution, and we were getting calls in. His office was getting calls and emails in up to the last minute. So I was personally hoping we might get 20 co-sponsors. I thought that would be impressive and a breakthrough. And as probably most people know, we wound up with 35 co-sponsors. So with Representative James, that's 36 altogether on the bill, which is was shocked everybody, including Representative James and me and pretty much everybody else. I don't know how much it's known in the state legislature yet, because they left town on Wednesday, and so I guess it'll be some shockwaves will be hitting up there as it becomes more known what the results were. Because each state representative that signed on didn't know who else was signing on. It's all an individual decision. That's the way the protocol seems to work up there. So we had, I guess, close to one-third of the Democrats in the state house co-sponsored the resolution. It would be 32 Democrats and 4 Republicans. There's a total of 203 members of the House of Representatives. So that's 36 altogether out of 203. So about 102 Democrats, I believe, so there were 32 Democrats. 13 out of 24 committee chairmen. The committee chairmen are the most senior members of the House and represent the leadership. So more than half of the Democratic leadership signed on. And then the 4 Republicans were also interesting. We had a 27-year Republican veteran of the state House. I think probably the others also been in there, each of them maybe 25 years. One of them is an officer of the Republican caucus, so he's sort of a boss of the Republican caucus in the House. And 2 others were minority chairmen of various committees. One of them, Paul Clymer, is known for his opposition to legalized gambling, which we just put in thanks to Governor Rendell and other support that it had. So, which is, of course, insane. But in any case, this representative, when I met with him, was interested to learn about how the hedge funds use these computer programs and studies of blackjack, poker, and roulette in order to develop their investment strategies. We took that article from EIR a couple of months ago, and that sort of blew his mind. So he signed on. And then there's a fourth Republican. The name probably would be familiar. Her name is first name is Maury, is a woman, and her last name is Gingrich. So we suspect she might be related to Newt Gingrich, since Newt Gingrich, you know, comes from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, originally. So that's an interesting group. So I would say it has broad bipartisan support with those kinds of co-sponsors on it. So when I was up in Harrisburg in Representative James's office on Thursday, I was in touch with our people in D.C., and they immediately wanted me to fax the resolution. As soon as we got it back from the Legislative Research Bureau with the bill number, of the H.R. 418, faxed it down to this congressman's office. And so this congressman wanted it immediately. So I faxed it directly to his office, and I think it had an impact immediately in Congress just based on that, let alone what Quinlay's saying and other examples we're going to see very soon. And so I'm sure it also will have that impact around the country when people see it's not just a token effort, because we've had resolutions before which have been important in terms of establishing, planting our flag, so to speak, politically in this country and playing and feeding that out internationally. But we're going for power here. We're going to get this resolution and bill in Congress, as Quinlay was saying, and put Lyndon LaRouche squarely in the center of the whole congressional process and the whole revival of the Franklin Roosevelt outlook. So it definitely was a breakthrough, and I think we'll see more of that around the country now.
Great. And people should know, again, look on the website. You can see this resolution Phil is talking about and all the other ones. In fact, there was a facsimile of it, I think, from Harrisburg posted, and that's www.larouchepac.com, LaRouchePac.com, because I'll just interject here, anyone listening from anywhere, Montana, Mississippi, wherever you may be, take any of these resolutions and go for it. Go for it on Monday, or don't wait till then. This is a completely open-ended and will make all the difference. Michigan, let's turn there next, Maria, or if you want to talk about any of the states in the upper Midwest, there's action in Ohio and elsewhere, but you have a resolution in Michigan that's 72 hours old, is that right?
Yeah. It was funny because we knew that Lamar Lemons was going to introduce this resolution. We didn't know exactly when it would be filed. So when we heard that there was 21 co-sponsors, when we woke up and heard the good news, you can imagine how happy we were. But as another youth member noted yesterday, LaGaia, she really stressed that this didn't just come out of the blue. This is the result of the last 7 years of our youth movement organizing, and also the last 3 to 4 years of the youth movement being out here in the Midwest consistently. And quite a few of these signers also had signed on to our retooling the auto industry resolution. Now, we had met with, we first had some scheduled meetings, and we decided to change our strategy on the second day and target people who we thought would be most likely to endorse and introduce. So we pulled some people out of the session, and we talked to three of the people we had pulled out, and two of them wound up co-sponsoring the resolution. We also had another impromptu meeting with somebody, and he also wound up signing the resolution. There's also one funny thing, which is when we called up this particular representative's office, the aide was quite rude and said, you know, nothing that you guys introduce will be satisfactory. But his representative wound up signing anyway. So I guess he doesn't communicate very well with his representative. But that was really just, it was really a result of being determined to make something happen there and creating a certain kind of environment in which, you know, through Ostrog Taktik, we actually were able to find people who we thought would be most likely to introduce. In Ohio, we had 30 scheduled meetings and at least 12 impromptu meetings. And I think the reason why there's just so much openness in Ohio is, you know, first of all, Ohio is one that has one of the highest rates of foreclosure in the country, as well as Michigan. And so just the readiness, the openness to just sit down with us and talk with us, even if we didn't have a scheduled meeting, everybody, Democrat and Republican, is having to deal with this crisis. So I really like the metaphor that this is just the first movement in a classical composition, that there's still three more movements to go. And what we're doing is we're actually laying the groundwork in Ohio, in Michigan, for people to be taken step by step through this whole financial collapse. And so I think that people are really, they're very ready to listen to real solutions. Now, we're looking for that one brave soul in Ohio to introduce, and we'll probably get, you know, just who knows how many people to sign on once that one person steps forward. And there were various examples that I thought were interesting to note. One senator that we met with, she represents a town that has really become like a ghost town. And when she heard LaRouche's 8-minute address on this crisis, she was very thankful for listening to it. And she asked if, you know, the federal government, or where would the funds actually come from to administer this policy? So she was very receptive, and, you know, we've been in ongoing discussion with her ever since. There's also somebody else, another senator, who's on the foreclosure task force, and he admitted that all this predatory lending policy is not going to do anything to solve the crisis. And he was already talked to by another representative who we've been organizing. And this other representative told him about the FDR precedent and about freezing all foreclosures. So there's already discussion in the Ohio legislature among themselves on freezing all foreclosures. So there's a lot of good questions asked, especially in response to LaRouche's 8-minute address. As well as, you know, these Republicans are really interesting. There was one Republican aide who's from a suburban area right outside of Cleveland. And you could tell he was really moved by the crisis hitting his hometown. He was very concerned and very open to, you know, regulating, you know, speculation and understanding that the entire financial system crashing is the cause of this problem. So there's just a real openness there. We've also been addressing many city councils. We've addressed Lansing, Pontiac, Grand Rapids, and Livonia so far. And the most likely city councils to move, I think, on this resolution are Detroit City Council and Pontiac City Council, when we have some pretty good contacts in there. So we've got some really good things, and I just think that the situation here is really open because this really is the area of the country which is on the front line of this economic collapse and really ready to move.
Thank you. And why don't we go geographically to the Northeast, to New England? New Hampshire, 10 days ago, had a resolution introduced by a couple of old friend legislators there. But, Allie, you're in the Boston office, and you have an overview on a multi-state region there. Would you give that?
Well, what we've had specifically over the last few weeks is a tremendous acceleration, especially over this last week, since we began this mobilization to now. And one of the reasons, I think, is, you know, as Kunle was saying, that we have really given a sense of hope and optimism. What we come in with, what the youth movement comes into these state legislatures, these city council meetings, is we come in representing hope and optimism for the world. And if you think about the current acceleration of the economic crisis, the economic collapse, the amount of foreclosures we've experienced over the last few months, and also the acceleration worldwide of this crisis in Southwest Asia, you can begin to understand the mindset of these people, where they are finally being hit over the head with this. They can't hide from the situation anymore. And who they're turning to, who they are really focusing on to lead them out of this economic crisis, to be their guide out of the crisis and into a real change away from this current system that we're in right now, is the LaRouche movement. It's the LaRouche Political Action Committee and the LaRouche Youth Movement. Because really, we are the only people who represent an efficient solution, an effective solution that would not only take us through the crisis, but would take us beyond into some of these optimistic projects that Michelle went through, some of this nuclear desalination, some of the projects that were brought up in the Kiedrich conference just about a week ago. And that's what we've been going in with, especially over the last few weeks. We've had a real intention, a real focus and drive to get this point across, to get across the conditions we need to lay out right now to actually have a future and to have future development. And what we found is people are responding to this more than anything. People are, in a sense, sick of what has been going on over the last few years, and they're ready to give themselves, their children, future generations a future to have. And so we've had, in New Hampshire, we caused a ruckus up in the State House a few weeks ago by phone. Then, after the legislation was introduced by these two representatives, we went over there this week and talked with a few of the other senators, a few other people, and are getting people to move. We're putting them in contact with a lot of the people down in Virginia. And another place that we've had a lot of contact with is this Connecticut. And we're seeing a break in Connecticut. Over the last few days, we've had a few meetings in Connecticut and a few endorsements in that state already. So there's really, you can kind of feel the break in the dam. It's almost like the little Danish boy took his finger out of the dam and all the water is beginning to burst, if anyone knows that story. But those are the two main states right now. But we've also had a reaction in New York. We visited the State House in Albany on Tuesday, and also in Rhode Island. In Rhode Island, we've had quite a reaction there, and we're going to follow up on that situation. Now, what we would like to do more of for the next few weeks is actually get a breakthrough in Massachusetts, because Massachusetts has so much influence as a state, and a lot of the people in the Massachusetts State House right now, you can see, are on the edge. Over the last few weeks, we've been consistently deploying into the State House with this Homeowners and Bank Protection Act, and we've been setting up meetings, we've been talking to people. Basically, we haven't allowed them to get this out of their minds. And we have a few people on the edge right now ready to endorse this resolution. And it seems to me that we just need one person to introduce it before we see a flood, another break in Massachusetts. One person to introduce it to have the courage and the bravery to actually introduce this resolution, and everything else will follow from there. And that's what we're really going to concentrate on, along with developing more of a crossfire between us up here in the Northeast and specifically the people on the federal level down on Capitol Hill in Washington, to really push this through at the federal level. And we've already had quite a bit of crossfire with people who have spoken with us in D.C., people who have been met at this CBC conference, and also a few close contacts of ours who apparently we've been in contact with for a few years. So we've started off with those people. Over the last few weeks, we've been talking to people who we've already had some sort of history with. for example, legislators who have signed on to the Lynn's Economic Recovery Act, et cetera. So now we're ready to boost up, step up our mobilization to include a much greater array of people and to make some contacts, to make some headway, and to get more and more legislators, senators, people all over the cities, at the schools, et cetera, involved with us in this fight, which this fight really is a fight for the future of economic development.
Well, taking off from that, any of you, you know, we still have 20 precious minutes left. You can throw in points that you want to make sure and get in. But the conditions, the underlying conditions in which, as someone mentioned about one of the staffers in Ohio is from suburban Cleveland, which is being hit like everywhere else. Phil, in Pennsylvania, you're Pennsylvania, western Pennsylvania to the west, or the East Coast megalopolis, it's some of its counties rank nationally among the highest in rates of foreclosure. Did that figures in everything in terms of the response you're talking about, I presume? Is there one thing that stands out?
Oh, yeah, definitely. What happened in some of the meetings that some people from the LaRouche Youth Movement had driven up to Harrisburg, and I guess it was Matt Ogden and Lewis Wilden were doing some meetings together with representatives. They walked into, or might have been another member of the LIM, I'm not sure, but they walked into one state representative's office, who's actually a Democrat from Berks County, which is next to Lancaster County. These two counties are close to each other. It's mostly rural, you know, some cities like Reading, but largely conservative, Republican. This is where the famous Pennsylvania Dutch are from, you know, Lancaster County. And the secretary said, sorry, the representative can't talk to you. He's busy on the phone with a mortgage problem, a mortgage crisis back in the district. So, of course, we said, well, that's exactly why we're here. We have a solution to this. And so the state rep poked his head out the door and said, I'll talk to you in 5 minutes. So when he sat down with us, he described a situation where a mortgage lender had just gone bankrupt the week before. This is a base in Berks County where 800 families had been basically bilked out of about $50 million, where this mortgage lender would have people write up mortgages with him, and then he would, unbeknownst to the person, contract with another company, possibly Countrywide, we're investigating who it was, for a larger mortgage. So he would keep the remainder, he would keep the difference, and invest it himself, make money off of it, pay the larger mortgage, but he still made money off the deal, clearly until the whole bubble collapsed in August, and he'd file for bankruptcy just the week before. And these people are liable for these larger mortgages that evidently they didn't know they had. So this is in your conservative, Republican, middle-class areas in central Pennsylvania, which doesn't fit the stereotype of the subprime mortgages in the inner cities. And, of course, you have this propaganda among the right-wingers and the neocons. Well, it's these people's fault themselves. They shouldn't have taken these big loans. They knew they didn't have the credit rating for it. So it was perfect, poetic justice for us to walk in there and find out about a big mortgage crisis, the biggest in the state right now, occurring in Lancaster County and Berks County. So needless to say, we used that to the hilt in getting under the skin of these legislators, and I think that made a big difference. And that still has yet to play out. I think it's got some great implications in terms of possible involvement of Countrywide and these other outfits in a major scam that just was uncovered in the last week.
Right. And in Michigan or any of the upper Midwest states, I know that the Detroit, the Wayne County area, is number two in the whole nation of the number of homes that have been filed for foreclosure out of the total number of households. But do you want to say anything, Maria, about the conditions? You had, the destructuring and bilking of the whole auto sector. Do you want to say anything about how what characterizes the emergency there?
Yeah, sure. Can you hear me?
Yes, just fine.
Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting that, you know, many of the co-sponsors onto this resolution from Michigan represent the Detroit area. You know, and this really has been, like you said, one of the highest rates of foreclosures, as well as, you know, many other parts of the Midwest and the country. But this has really been hit hard. And, you know, a lot of people here do associate the loss of jobs, with the auto industry, and other types of machine tool sectors and smaller industries. Right, people do see that the loss of jobs, then you can't make payments on your homes and so forth. So people do associate the collapse of the economy with the housing crisis. But people are also able to see that it is a global systemic crisis as well. I think people do recognize the collapse of the industry here to the housing crisis. And I think that was just indicative of the people who signed on to this resolution.
Right. One thing that you mentioned, the cumulative impact of the LaRouche Youth Movement out of Detroit in the Midwest. Mr. Lamar Lemons, that is the father who introduced the resolution you're talking about, his son gave a walking tour of the loss of the, he called it snaggletooth housing in Detroit, where there were empty lots with weeds in them. That was a year or so ago when the DVD was made of the Need for Emergency Recovery Act. Is that right?
Yeah, right. No, he did do a walking tour with us. I wasn't present at that particular event, but I do know that when we did another walking tour recently, I was really amazed. It was right on the border of Detroit and Dearborn. And I was really amazed at just, every other house, you had to walk past two or three houses that were foreclosed on just to get to the next one that you could knock on. And there was one house that we came up to, and I guess the two people who had been living there, they were still living there, they were squatting, and they had an extension cable from the house across the street to their street for a space heater. And they were pushing their lawnmower to go mow somebody else's lawn, probably to make a few dollars. So it's really, it really is, you see the collapse everywhere. It's really sad.
Right. And again, someone may jump in here, but we have a chance, Allie, to talk to you about the fact Massachusetts kind of led the nation in the Democratic Party passing an emergency resolution that was written by the LaRouche Youth Movement. I think Megan Beetz, that something must be done about housing and the entire world banking collapse. Is that's still resonating, I presume, in Massachusetts?
Yes, and we've been actually using that to our advantage. In general, there is a very aware environment about the housing collapse and about the problems in the housing market, the foreclosure market. Now, a lot of this has taken... has manifested itself in the Attorney General holding these predatory foreclosure hearings over the last week. Now, the problem is, and he basically held these in some of the cities in Massachusetts. We have five cities in Massachusetts on the list of the top 100 most foreclosed upon cities. And the problem with this was we testified at every single one of these events, but most of the other people, most of the entire event was actually centered around this problem with these predatory loaners, which, yes, that's a problem. However, by simply going after that, they completely lose sight of the fact that the housing crisis is merely a manifestation of a much greater systemic crisis, a much greater global collapse of the economic system. There's a problem with our economic system that has allowed for these predatory loaners to occur, these speculations on the housing crisis, this housing bubble to occur. And that's what we've been trying to bring in as a perspective. We've been trying to get people more rallied around the greater global situation, which is what happened when we passed this resolution in the Democratic Party on the housing crisis.
That's an occasion where, when was it? About 6 months ago, people responded to what you were saying about it.
Yes, they definitely did. And they're responding again, but the problem is we also have Barney Frank here, And he's been pushing these predatory loaning, this insuring only houses or mortgages that are $750,000 and over. And so they've been affected by that as well. So we're just trying to stay on the flank of actually getting at it from a higher standpoint. And the interesting thing, one thing I want to say is we've had a very interesting response from Rhode Island when we went there a few days ago, where it seems that the entire state house, the entire state in general, has been fighting for the last few years on this question of the housing crisis. And there have been quite a few bills coming out of the legislature there in regards to, you know, these predatory lending practices, in regards to, in general, the speculation of the housing market. And so we're really trying to, I mean, we just started mobilizing in Rhode Island a few days ago, but we're really trying to accelerate that fight as well and bring them into this.
Right. Well, let me say, Coonley said earlier on that now we're looking to force the issue with Congress to get actual action there. But on whether state, local, or whatever, in the closing minutes, Phil, in Pennsylvania itself, or you've been elsewhere in the country, in the West and so forth, what do you see the, is this, are you seeing more city council actions or more co-sponsors in Harrisburg, or what do you see some of the next battlefronts being?
Well, I think we're going to have congressmen realize that to be known as the LaRouche man in Congress is makes you immune to attack and guarantees the advancement of your political career. I mean, we saw this with Harold James in Pennsylvania. It's a very interesting example. In 2004, many of you know Harold James endorsed Lyndon LaRouche for president in the Democratic primary, and he didn't just put his name on a paper. He taped radio ads, and we raised the funds to put 1 minute radio ads on the radio all over the city. And his friends in the Democratic Party were totally hysterical. I got a call from a friend of his who was a state representative and still is, saying, "Are you going to defend Harold James? The Democratic Party is going to destroy him. They're going to run somebody against him. They're going to spend a lot of money. They're going to destroy his political career. Are you going to stand by him? What are you going to do about this?" They're all totally freaked out about this. Of course, that wasn't the first time Harold James worked with us, but it's the first time he endorsed Lyndon LaRouche for president in the Democratic primary that way. And, of course, the next time Harold James ran in 2006, he ran unopposed. Not only was there no Democrat running against him, there was no Republican running against him. Nobody ran at all. And now he's a Democratic committee chairman in Harrisburg. Actually, ironically, he's the chairman of the Gaming Oversight Committee, which is one of the most powerful committees in the state legislature right now.
That qualifies him for dealing with housing speculation.
Yeah, you said it. So in any case, it shows, and of course, when we did these meetings, some of the youth movement members met these state representatives and said, yeah, Harold, he's the LaRouche man in the legislature. You know, I knew he'd do something like this. And so this, I think, is one of the reasons, perhaps, why people signed up, you know, with LaRouche's name in the resolution originally. It was the darn lawyers at the Legislative Reference Bureau in the clerk's office that took Lynn's name out of the resolution, saying, you know, the legislature can't endorse an individual, only a policy, and blah, blah, blah. But people, when they signed on, we circulated the resolution, said, support this act as proposed by economist Lyndon LaRouche. So I think that's one of the reasons why so many people did sign on. This is LaRouche's idea. It must mean something. This is for real. Harold James is doing it, and we're with him. So I think we're going to have to see some congressmen have the guts to stand up as being the LaRouche man or LaRouche woman in the Congress and realize that's a plus for their stature in this country and internationally.
Thanks. I think you're making the point. Guts don't have to be born. They can be acquired, and we're given the ability to grow some somewhere. I throw in, Coonley may know more, or any of the rest of you, I think the teams are going to Sacramento, California, where, as was mentioned, Mervyn Dimerly, who himself was head of the Congressional Black Caucus, had a distinguished fighting career in Congress, and then in his retirement became a leader of California's state house. But are there, Coonley, on the state and local level, you're just saying this motion is just growing all over the country. Do you have any specifics you want to bring out?
Yeah, I could say that with the endorsement from Harold James and also from Mervyn Damley and also from the state legislatures and Juanita Walton, we just had a member, Jason Ross, just had a meeting with the San Jose City Council. And this meeting, this City Council last week was the end of all the meetings that they've been having with the San Jose City Council. They've been going every Thursday and every Wednesday, either Wednesday or Thursday, going up to San Jose from Oakland to San Jose to meet with the San Jose City Council, and they have completed that already. And now the next step right now is to go with the state legislatures in Pennsylvania, what's been going on in the Midwest, and what's been going on, you know, all over the country, to go to Sacramento to pressure the state legislature in California to issue out also a resolution, passing in the House, to make sure that we get the California state senators and you know, to pass this thing. Because if you can get California to do this with Mervyn Damley's endorsement, it will really put so much pressure on Senators Barbara Feinstein and Barbara Boxer and also the California congressmen in the House. Because California has the largest number of congressional districts in the country compared to Texas, I think. So I think that will also fuel the fire to make sure that the living memory of FDR, which Lynn embodies, would be resurrected in the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. Because Lynn is not only bringing the Democrats together, but Republicans too. So Lynn is not only seen as a unifier, but a unifier of complete ideologies in both political parties to come in together to form a coalition or to coalesce a coalition to make sure that the survival of the republic is at stake, and to begin to understand who the historical enemy is, and to begin to understand why this is happening and who is doing it, and why the United States has to go back to assert its sovereignty right now.
I'll just make a pitch again, since you said that, about what is the nature of the United States as a republic, as opposed to the British Empire. That's the name of the, you could say, the October 10 webcast by Mr. LaRouche that will be something like Save the American Republic from the British Empire. And we do that here, and it has strategic implications all around the globe, as people have been bringing out. And that September 10th is at 1 p.m. Eastern United States time, 1 p.m., and people know where to see it, www.larouchepac.com, LaRouchePac.com. And I recommend also people go on there right now as you're listening. If you're on the telephone and you're listening to it later on a message line throughout the week, these resolutions people have spoken of, including the months-old housing one from the Democratic Party of Massachusetts, the new Pennsylvania and Michigan one, they're all there. And there are 50 states, and you don't need a special reservation or an authorization to force the issue. It could be a civic-minded congressman from Idaho, where we don't have a resident LaRouche youth movement yet. But this is the dynamic that's involved. We have a couple minutes. One of you may want to jump in with some of the few last words. Does anyone have a message that didn't get out yet? Maria, do you have anything from Detroit you want to stress?
Nothing else. But we're just going to continue to try to get that one brave soul in Ohio, and we're going to try to get some stuff passed in some of these city councils. We will see the Detroit City Council and Pontiac move quickly.
That's right. And the same, Allie, are you reiterating some of the states in your domain?
Yes. Well, I think the only thing I would like to say is let's just keep an optimistic view on all of this and really try and really get this through for our own good and for the good of mankind.
And Phil, Mr. Pennsylvania, you're the one that's been organizing campaigns that for 20 years there, I said, before you got on the phone. You're saying the same thing, I presume.
Well, I would say thanks for the report about Ohio. I mean, we have plenty of contacts. One thing that made a difference in Pennsylvania is we went to that Democratic State Convention got about 75 contacts, and a lot of them mobilized to contact the state representatives they knew to tell them to co-sponsor that resolution. And that made a big difference to what we were doing in Harrisburg. So we've got plenty of good contact supporters in Ohio. You should get them on the case. They probably know their state representative. Many of them may. They should contact them, and that'll do the trick. Secondly, we intend to get this resolution in the state Senate, too. How about that? Let's get 10, 15 senators out of 50 and play that back into Congress also.
That's great. I want to thank you all. You can phone for information at toll-free within the United States at 800-929-7566. And do listen on October 6th. And Harley Schlanger, our co-host here, is going to be down in Austin, Texas in the next 10 days doing, guess what, pushing for the shift that we're now talking about. So remember October 10th, the LaRouche webcast. And thank you all very much. We're closing out September 29th, 2007. This is Marcia Mary Baker saying thanks to Phil, Allie, Maria, and Kunle. Thank you very much.